just whenever I said this got me thinking about the history of the show. Forget it. Scratch it.
All of it.
All of it.
We have our intro.
Exactly. God
damn it. If I die, no, I lived and missed some bullets. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything that's shining always gonna be gold. To the Mediocre Movie Cast, in which we discussed the latest episode of Game of Thrones, this week entitled The Door. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight, we got another big group, is Sean Riley. Say hello,
hello.
Sean.
Hello. Intros are hard.
Intros are hard. I need to just pick an order and stick with it. Bobby Schmidt is also with us tonight. Shane Settner.
Yo.
Blair Settner.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, perhaps enticed by our talk 2 weeks ago of the top of Jon Snow's butt, is Ashley Keller.
Hello.
And a non-MMC member in a big piercing of the MMC veil, bringing in outsiders into our group, is Brendan Bort McKee.
Hello.
Who just dropped a bag of money?
Oh, that's just Dingo walking around being a jackass, like always.
That's what that was. Yeah. Okay, first things first. Who won the week? Game of Thrones, Silicon Valley, or Veep?
Game of Thrones won the week.
Game of Thrones
Silicon
won.
Silicon Valley was the worst of the season.
On the Veep front, the Joan Ryan for Congress, that really gets my dander up. How fantastic that whole thing is going to be. But that was just announced this week. We'll get his campaigning and focus groups later in the season. But yeah, Game of Thrones killed it this week.
I couldn't even really enjoy Silicon Valley. I need to rewatch.
You're just too broken up after this episode of Game of Thrones.
I may have played that one Boys to Men song when their friend died.
I'll make love to
times.
You?
Yes. Yeah. Big necrophiliacs.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, no question. Game of Thrones won. This was the best episode of the season. I've been saying that for 3 weeks in a row. It's always a good thing when the episodes get progressively better and better. A lot of hope for the season. I think we're continuing to build various plot lines. They're steaming towards a resolution in many cases. We're making progress. Things are happening. And the season's half over now.
It's like the building of a world. So speaking of, you should listen to our Deadwood podcast as well.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. None more shameless.
Speaking of, Shane, can we get that slogan going again? A little benzene law group?
Oh, yeah. Benzene Law Group will get you the justice you need and the money you deserve.
That's our sponsor.
Actually, right?
Yeah, after a month of sponsoring all this
How
money into
Big
our coffers, we finally we'll take Big Yellow Dog.
Big Yellow Dog is sponsoring listener questions later today.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sweet.
That's a tease.
Okay. That's we blew it. Sorry, listeners.
At least it's no longer a listener.
Stop. No, don't break the illusion, Shane. We're well into the thousands by this point.
Also, don't jinx it.
We're going to start this week with Danny real quick, because I think as we move through the storylines, we're going to have a lot to talk about at the end. So we're just going to blast through our Essos plot lines this week. Danny, the only thing that happened with her after her big inferno last week was that she is debriefing with Jorah and Dario about this whole process, and Jorah says he has to leave because he has grayscale, and she says you are forbidden to leave, you have to go cure yourself and then come back. So she's forgiven him for all of his betrayals, and he rides in one direction and Danny takes the Dothraki and rides in a different direction. So she got a lot of play last weekend. And this is just the one scene with her, really, this week. So real quick, in Vice Dothrak, not a lot happened there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We did have someone actually ask about Danny, so
yeah,
a listener question now. Philip E. from Southern Indiana, I believe a modern day grad.
I believe he is.
Said, can you discuss how literally nothing actually bad has happened to Danny since the show started? It's becoming eye roll inducing.
I guess the question would be, when would you count the show as starting? Is it after she is sold into sex slavery by her brother?
I mean, I was about to say she got raped.
Yeah. I think he means after this, I would assume.
Okay. So nothing bad has happened to her aside from that rape. So I think we're going to discount this question a little bit as
and also the death
maybe
of the
he needs
child.
To.
Yeah, I'm gonna say let's push this back. We may hear about some bad things that happened to Danny in the power rankings later.
Oh, that's a teaser!
Fantastic. So we got a yellow dog, a sponsorship on the table. And we've got power rankings on the table. So this is how you keep people invested in your podcast. Right here. It would have been a little nice for Danny to, for the Dothraki to get a word in this episode. We're just taking for granted that the whole of their society is now blindly following her. But whatever. Hand wave.
But it was a little cheesy, the scene. Anyone else?
Yep. It was a little too sappy for me. I didn't really think Danny would be that moved by Jorah finally admitting it. I mean, she's known it forever, right? So him just finally saying it, I don't know. I didn't think it would move her to tears and all that, but...
Well, Jorah's always kind of seemed like he should be on the cover of a romance novel, so that's kind of what that scene felt like.
He does leave his shirt, halfway buttoned up a lot of the time.
The man can marry it to me anytime with that voice, I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you said, Ashley, that Daenerys already knew about...
I mean, I would assume she already knew he was in love with her.
Oh, okay. I thought she meant the grayscale. Oh, yeah,
but
I'm sure she
did that. You saying, they're just blindly following, that's kind of, goes with the timeline jumping too fast. We're just moving really fast now.
Well, depends on where in the world you are.
I can imagine, Danny not being on camera for another couple episodes or something like that, because she's got to now take this mass of people from Vice Dothrak to presumably back to Marine.
But it's not that far. We Googled it at work today. We compared it to OTP versus ITP.
So I don't know what those things are.
Oh, God. It might
Kissel,
as well be.
Kissel.
It might as well
You're
be a giant ice
Atlanta.
Wall between.
Yeah.
So for non Atlanta listeners, OTP is the suburbs, ITP is the actual city of Atlanta. And there's a freeway that runs around that kind of makes
AKA
it.
The wall.
The wall, yeah.
Well, that's our new segment, Atlanta Geography. look forward next week to something about the north and the south of it. I don't know.
No, but really, it's not that far by a district.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're walking tens of thousands of people
they
between those two locations, and
well,
it's
few
like
of
a
them,
desert,
man. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Drogon's going to pick up somewhere in there.
You would think so.
Because we'll see Shadow in the previews. He'll be over the Khalasar soon enough.
I had a dragon epiphany earlier today. The reason we're five episodes in with no dragons. Well, when they spent a bunch of CGI money on White Walkers last night, they have to save all their budget for just a couple episodes. So the dragons are going to be few and far between.
That is definitely a possibility. We've just seen them in the dark and the dungeon, pretty much. I don't think we've seen Drogon at all this season, right?
We have not.
Okay. So, yeah, there might be something to that. Saving money up for the inevitable big confrontation. I get it.
For my 50-point hurrah.
Yeah, so that was our 10-point or our 10-minute stop-in in Danny's two scenes. So let's move on to Meereen, where Danny is probably heading. We see that Tyrion's plan of buying off the slavers has essentially worked in Marine. It's a little more peaceful there. Sons of the Harpy have taken a big, deep breath, but he is not quite satisfied. He wants to involve some native Marinese people, or at least from that part of the world, to kind of just tamp down potential rebellion and get people on Dany's side. So that takes the form of awesome new character Kinvara, who is a red priestess from the neighboring city of Volantis. They have a scene in the throne room that, if not for the ending, I thought was the scene of the episode. I looked up who that actress was. She's Israeli. Hasn't really been anything I've seen before, but I thought she killed it. Just staring down and...
No, Rachel Weisz?
No, she just looks like her.
It did look very much like her. I think she's also Israeli. But, it was not her. But it very well might as well have been. Yeah.
This was one of my favorite episodes, mostly because of the interaction with Varys.
Yeah, I don't remember how much they talked about his becoming a eunuch on the show, but I had just listened to that chapter where Varys told that story the day before, so that scene was awesome for me.
They actually go a little further in the show where Varys has dedicated a lot of time to revenge, and he's actually captured the sorcerer and has him in a box. But I think the big thing for me in the scene is Varys hates magic more than anything in the entire world because of that, and she's confronted him with this prophecy and things about fire and magic, and it's the first time we really see him unnerved and afraid. And I think, I don't know, it's just kind of big and telling, I think, moving forward.
Yeah, I very much hope we see more of Kinvara. She just looks right through those two guys and like right into their core of their being and just breaks them down. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I'd say she was too strong of a force of nature, too strong of a performance, her will in that scene. We're going to see her again.
Yeah. There was the one-off wildling captain, female wildling captain from Hardhome last season, and hopefully they've learned their lesson. They're going to introduce this badass new character and hopefully give her more screen time. We learn more about the Lord of Light. These guys are very deterministic. Like, she plays off Varys' castration as a good thing because it led him to where he is now. What's the brand of Protestantism? There's like X number of people that gets into heaven, Blair.
Oh, that's Jehovah's Witnesses.
144,000?
Okay, yeah, I was thinking about the exact number.
And they're pre-selected.
Correct, Bobby.
By
God.
Whatever. By someone, who cares?
That's always been the weird thing to me. If there's such a limited number, why do they recruit so hard?
I mean, maybe they're going to be...
It kind of limits their odds if there's so many people.
That's right.
Yeah, actually, they come to our house a lot. And usually when I say I'm a pastor, they leave. But we've got this one woman who keeps coming back. And I don't know enough about Jehovah's Witness to know if they actually believe it's 144,000, okay, like, to a T.
I'm sure she'd tell you if she asked.
Wow. I'm going to enjoy that conversation when she comes.
There's something else, like they don't celebrate birthdays either? Or something like
that?
I did a Jehovah's Witness in elementary school, and they did not celebrate Halloween. I remember that.
Right, any holidays.
The holidays in general.
Do they not like cake?
It's more candles than cake.
Yeah, it seems to be a cake-based religion.
I thought you said cake.
Do they not like kink?
What?
Oh, yeah.
It's always
accepted. Yeah, no birthdays for Jehovah's Witnesses, but leather out the ass. I think that'll wrap us up for me. We've offended all of our Jehovah's Witnesses base.
Hi, Dingo.
Dingo's infuriated. I believe he's one of the 144,000.
I mean, there's a good reason to not celebrate Dingo's birthday. It may or may not be because he's Jehovah's Witness. It might be because he's a piece of shit. But sticking at Essos, up to the northeast-western part of it in Braavos, Arya's doing some more training, ineffectual training. The waif gets the better of her without her staff. Calls her Lady Stark. She still doesn't believe that Arya is no one, even though she passed the poison test a couple episodes ago. Jaqen is listening. He gives her a little bit of a history lesson. The Faceless Men were slaves from Valyria, and they eventually left that area and founded Braavos themselves. And after that little lecture, he gives her her second assignment, with the severe implication that If she does not complete this, then they're going to kill her because she fucked up the insurance agent guy in last season. And her assignment is an actress in a theater troupe whose main performance... Go ahead.
Benzene Lager should have sponsored this right here because we fuck up the insurance companies.
Where Aria fails, Benzene Lager succeeds.
I thought he was about to just glaze right over that.
It would have been deserved.
Benzene Law Group won't get distracted by someone who killed their old mentor. They'll focus on the insurance agent in their sights and complete their mission. I mean, that's a solid commercial right there. I think people will get it, and if they don't, then you don't want them as clients, anyways.
They get rather distracted by nerdy fantasy baseball, though.
Oh yeah. God! And you know how much we love that here at the Mediocre Movie Cast. Arya's target is an actress in a troupe, and she goes to see this troupe. She gets all dressed up, gets her hair in Princess Leia style buns, and she watches basically the first season of Game of Thrones reenacted. Ned Stark as a bumbling fool, or a hillbilly more accurately. Tyrion as a twisted dwarf. And she does not like this one bit. It turns out she's working for the theater troupe. And in a shocking, shocking cut, we go from the play to staring down the barrel of an uncircumcised dick.
Which Blair missed.
Backstage. I laughed and laughed.
That was a hard cut.
That was a hard cut.
Hard cut.
Hard cut.
I was looking down. So was he, though.
Yeah, right down the barrel. That was a pretty shocking transition. But Arya's backstage, and she observes the actress that she has her, or that the faceless men have an eye on, and observes that she's just a person, not bad necessarily. But and she voices these complaints to Jaqen, but he tells her that that's not up to them to decide. The goodness of their targets. It's just them to give them the gift, so to speak. So what'd you guys think of... That was a very long segment in the play.
It was too long.
Yeah. You think?
Well, listener Drew Landry had this question. What did you make of the play that was basically the first season?
It's a
great question, Drew.
Drew, who has never watched a single season?
Yeah, has... Is he just Drew Landry is in the Mediocre Movie Club, by the way. Excuse me, Drew L. My bad.
No, I said it.
We'll cut it out.
We'll keep saying Drew Landry.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
his name once is you're in the
check-a-merk.
Once you're in the group, then you lose your anonymity.
That's right.
So that's part of the contract that you sign. Does he watch the show?
He does not.
Okay. Whatever. Well, he could have been caught up if he had watched that play. Because it was quite thorough.
I was actually a little distracted on the play. Not the guy's junk hanging out. I thought that the younger actress's tits were a bit too nice for the Seven Kingdoms.
For a rough theater troupe.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. Who think nothing of just like a urological exam in the middle of their preparation backstage.
I'm glad Sean brought that up because I felt bad about like just being me thinking that.
Well, I think that was very calculating on the showrunner's parts. Like, we're going to bare this actress's breasts on stage. But, hey, guess what we've got upcoming? Next scene. Really balancing the scales. So this is kind of a bit of a placeholder. Arya, just all she did was voice her concerns. She didn't actually follow through with the assassination. I think she's just still gaining information.
I hate this storyline.
Really?
Yeah, I'm so bored with it.
Does
everyone think that Arya's gonna leave?
I honestly don't care. Like, I just don't.
You don't care about Arya Stark reuniting with her family?
Unless she reunites with the direwolf, which
right.
is looking for
I think she
it's
will.
On the table.
I think she, yeah.
It's currently happened.
Especially with all of them falling off rather quickly. But my problem with this here is it just seems to be taking so long for her to develop any physical ability. She's had two Bravasi fighting trainers now, and she's still absolutely horrible and gets her ass kicked every time.
Yeah, something needs to happen. Something right. big.
So, I mean, I think we're going to end up seeing Nymeria in a vision, and that's going to be her connection to the Starks and everything back in Westeros somehow, but I don't know. Yeah, I wish they'd push this a little quicker.
Though. Or she doesn't follow through with this contract and has to run away from the Faceless Men.
That's what I thought was going to happen this episode. Yeah.
I think
she was going to get incensed by the play and bounce. Mm-hmm.
Or, like, lash out and kill someone she's not supposed to. Like the guy playing her father.
Right. Well, but I feel like she won't do that at this point. Well, and she didn't.
I would agree that it's going a little slowly. It seems like they could have compressed last season with what's happened so far in this season. Like, she goes blind in episode 6 of last season. And then, I don't know, gets her sight back by the end. And then this season, we're just a little more, we're moving a little faster. I don't mind at all, because I like all these characters in Braavos, and it's a great
set. I do like the history lesson we got. I think that's pretty important in general, and would probably be one of the bigger topics, if not for a couple other things that happened in the episode.
Yeah, I'm with John. I actually like the storyline. I think it's super interesting. I think for the most part, it's been better than anything Danny's been doing, so...
I'm just better than Danny just killing like 50.
Like, I didn't really care. Like, before that, what did she do?
Before
she
that, wandered around, kept going,
"Where are my dragons? Where are my dragons?"
God, you know, she said that once, like 3 or 4 years ago. Let it go.
But what happened since?
Yeah.
Jorah, you're banned. Jorah, you're banned. Jorah, well, you're back in.
I love Arya as a character and her story. I just wish it would start moving again. That's all.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, have talked about how Arya has been their favorite character, and until I started listening to the book, I didn't see it. I think in the show she's been mostly boring, but in the books they're some of the strongest chapters. So, I don't know. Bring it together. Let's get going.
The show's gone a long way with pairing her with interesting people like Tywin back in season 2 and the Hound for a long time, and Hot Pie for a period as well. and she's just been stuck with... I mean, it's not that Jaqen isn't... He's lost a little bit. Like, he just hasn't done anything. He's just been standing around in a robe being mysterious, whereas we were introduced to him being a super magic assassin. So she just hasn't had as much to play against, or as much to play off of. And yeah, hopefully she takes a trip at some point this season, general awards or no. One place she might go is the Iron Islands.
Oh, before we go there, I just want to say,
God, blowing my segues.
He was trying to segue.
Blowing my segues.
I know you can do that in a second here, but
well, it's too late now.
The guy who played, well, we've also proven in the past, segues don't matter, you can throw them whatever.
Very few things matter here at the
media. The guy playing Ned Stark as an idiot just killed me.
You didn't like him or liked him?
No, I loved it. I really wanted him to have an EB voice. Be like, oh, I'm a stop, knock it off now.
I think the writers have been reading some comment boards, like dumb Ned Stark and that kind of stuff.
That's what I thought too. It was like a shout out to the fans.
Yeah, Herb de Derp, I'm going to tell Cersei everything.
A shout out that lasted like 5 minutes too long.
In the Iron Islands, we're Kingsmooting, which is the Iron Islanders' practice of electing a new leader when there isn't a clear heir. Yara is the first to put herself forward. She kind of shits all over the last 100 years or several hundred years of Ironborn tradition of where they just assemble a fleet, take some land, get that land taken back from them, spanked by the powers that be, and restart the whole process. She's looking to break out of that cycle. But the Ironborn are a little reticent to have a woman leading them, and someone asks why Theon isn't volunteering, but he puts whatever weight he has behind Yara. He gives her a rousing defense and is able to say his name. Big step for Theon. But it's all interrupted by Euron Greyjoy, who steps in and humiliates Theon and admits freely to killing Balon for exactly what Yara said he was doing. He's just wasting everyone's time in useless cycles. And he says his plan is to make the Iron Islands great again, build a huge fleet, bring it to Dany, and they'll ally and take over Westeros, and they elect him. Bobby, you're the... Or we got several book readers here.
We do.
I think this was fine as far as... I don't know how you guys...
Make the Iron Islands great again.
Yeah, exactly.
This was in the book or no?
Yes.
It was, but it was quite a bit different, but...
It's just longer. It's not so much longer. Different.
I think it's bigger. There's a lot more people speaking, and yeah, it's just...
I was waiting for a horn to be blown by
sure.
a dude
yeah.
that bled everywhere.
Yeah. I think, the only thing that sets Euron, or puts Euron over the finish line is that he has a plan for what to do with the ships. Like, Yara also wants to build a huge fleet, but she just doesn't have a... She's unable to get her plan out while Euron is ready to go. The difference between them could have been a little bit better fleshed out. But like the character stuff, like Theon throwing his weight behind his sister and Yara reacting accordingly, and then them afterwards running away together with the best ships in the fleet. I mean, good for Theon. Good for Yara.
We actually thought for a hot second he was going to not endorse her.
Oh, really?
Endorse himself, yeah. That long pause, we liked it.
I think that was, I don't know, I think that pause made it really important because
yeah.
She didn't know either, and it just, I don't know, kind of solidified her trusting him again in whatever they do, obviously, especially running off with the entire fleet wherever they're going to head.
And that pause, too, I think he's, like, summoning up the strength to be able to say his name.
Yeah.
Just something that he was harshly prevented from doing for a long time.
I guess you noted Theon wasn't there in the books at all. He wasn't at the kingdom.
No.
So
yeah.
That was one of the bigger differences, I guess.
And there's a second brother to Balon, who's like the hard-ass admiral to Euron's sneaky pirate. But here nor there. They merge those two characters together. I don't have any problem with that. Fuck the Greyjoys. I don't like them. We also see the Greyjoys coronation ceremony, in which the king is drowned in the ocean, dragged back to shore. Everyone stands around and waits for him to live or die.
Oh, this part absolutely cracked me up.
Oh, very much so. They're just the fucking worst. They're the goddamn worst. If Theon and Yara had any sense, they'll never come back to this place. They'll change their names and just do something else. Because these guys are so dumb.
Just finger bang on horses the rest of their days.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of their days.
It's hard to take them seriously when you know what they've done.
I have a Iron Island special request for Pastor Blair.
Uh-oh.
Next baptism, can you whisper a little, what is dead may never die?
Say that again.
Next baptism, can you whisper to the kid what is dead may never die?
Hold him
I thought he was
going
to ask
long.
You to hold him under
yeah,
a little
bit too long.
Oh, that would be awesome.
No, you gotta wonder. Step back, let this baby spit it up on his own.
Yeah, you're just holding everyone back. Like, no, nobody help him. This is the
He's
ceremony.
Gonna be fine. He'll live or he'll die.
But if you help him, I'll tell you right now, he will not be joining youth group. Not mine.
That's what we did at Jeff's. I don't know if you guys remember, but as godmother, I held him under.
The great thing is, if Euron wouldn't have woke up, they all would have blamed him and said he was a fake king.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then pissed off at him for them being the ones drowning him.
This is some more dumb religious shit. And I say this dumb as in people being religious in the show. Like Virus gives Kinvara the business about how you can never, or the Lord of Light is never wrong. You just interpret him incorrectly. It's never the Lord of Light's fault. You just messed up the reading. It's the way of insulating themselves from looking stupid. And this is the exact same thing. Whereas maybe the tradition of drowning someone until they stop breathing That's not dumb. What's dumb is the person actually drowning and not waking back up somehow. You gotta wonder how many good kings potentially they've lost over the years with this dumb process. Everyone just stands around like an idiot, like, well, shit. I guess it goes to the next guy.
Well, and this is accurate to the books. A reader question about, she asked, this is Tia?
H.
H from where?
Atlanta. People's Town.
Hey, from Town. OTP or the other one?
It's IDP. Yeah. Other one. If you're not from Atlanta if you're OTP. All right. So, she basically asked, like, what are the seven gods? And I thought, like, maybe we can break down drowned gods, old gods, what the
I can do the seven if you like. It's the mother, the father, the maiden, the warrior, the smith, the stranger, and the crone.
All right.
Where do they come from?
Where do they come from?
Eight.
We're going to talk a little bit more about ancient Westerosi history in Bran's section. And it's very tied up in religion as well. Because there's like these waves of immigration into Westeros, and they all bring their own gods. Let's put a pin in this question and come back to it.
Tia H, we'll be back.
Yeah.
Keep listening.
Great question, Tia H. She's jumped the gun. Daryl W.
There it is.
He says, which dragon will kill Euron Greyjoy when he looks at Dany the wrong way?
Ooh. Well, question A is how long is it going to take him to build these 1,000 ships?
With the 25 people that are there.
Hey, everybody's working hard.
Based on this fucked up timeline.
Has anyone ever seen a tree on the Iron Island sets in the first place? from what the show has depicted.
The most wood they have is now on Euron's head. I'm pretty sure.
See, I thought those were collarbones. They had a little bit of a look of that.
It's the driftwood crown, isn't it? Isn't that what it's supposed to be?
It's supposed to be driftwood. It looked like
no squirrel bones.
No squirrel bones. I can't stress that enough.
There's a joke three people get.
Who knows? I don't have any sense of what the timeline is here. There's only five episodes left and a lot of stuff.
I don't see him getting over to Essos anytime soon, or in the series, probably. There's no reason for any more characters to actually go there, right? We're all going to move
west. It's also possible that Theon and Yara stole his battle plan and are heading that direction anyways. So, I don't have any sense of it. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing here.
Well, they can't steal the providing her the giant Iron Island cock part of the battle plan. That's out the window.
A key part of any strategy. But as far as which dragon will kill him, I mean, the Iron Islanders, they have a tradition of kidnapping wives. So who knows what will happen there. The clock is ticking on this show, and this kind of seems like a distraction or a potential spoiler. Like if we've got 19 episodes left, how many can be spent with people chasing after Euron Greyjoy, who's kidnapped Dany, or whatever. It just seems like they need to tighten up on these potential distractions. And the Greyjoys are a bit of a distraction, right?
I don't know. I kind of enjoy the storyline, and I'd love to see
Euron get
roasted. That'd be great. I can totally see how it'd be happening. He's going to be super cocky as shit, and a nutball, and be like, oh, you know, dragons can't stop me.
And this could very well be the substitute of a similar plot line in the book.
Exactly.
Right.
It's been trimmed.
I was just about to say.
But he got me a lot of points, so I'm a Euron fan. Despite how cruel he was to Theon.
I believe Theon got me a few points. I don't even know what for.
For saying his name.
He got status points. I don't know what he really got upgraded to, but sure.
Yara's number two, perhaps. We're going to head north next. No Winterfell this week. All right. Three cheers. I think that had a big part to do with how good this episode was. No Ramsay to get down. I don't have to complain about him this week. We start with Sansa.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, I got it in. I got it in. I was hoping I could just blast on by that without anyone commenting and slapping me a little bit, stopping me. But alas, here we are. We start with Ramsay's victim, Sansa, receiving a letter from Littlefinger, who wants to meet at Moletown. It was only one episode ago that he was in the Vale, but now he's in the far, far north. So,
how'd you guys do in geography with that today, Ashley?
We did not Google that. Sorry.
Very far. It's from like Atlanta to some other Georgian city.
Savannah.
Other Georgian cities?
Sure. Yeah, there you go. Sansa's not too happy with Littlefinger. She says he's either an idiot for not knowing about Ramsay or an enemy for putting her with a psychopath. And she drags out exactly what Ramsay did to her and makes Littlefinger confront it. He pleads ignorance and begs forgiveness and says, you know, my forgiveness or my regret is in the form of thousands and thousands of Vale knights who can help you retake Winterfell. But she says, go fuck yourself. I'm going to get my own soldiers. And he leaves her, but not before saying that the Blackfish has returned to the Riverlands and he's rallied a force there and he's retaken Winterfell. And he recommends going after her. Do we buy Littlefinger here, pleading ignorance?
No.
Is he an idiot?
He's done almost nothing without knowing what's going on. He just doesn't do it. He's too calculated.
Yeah, like, which I think is interesting about this episode, between him and Varys, we see both of them, I guess, unnerved and a bit ruffled, and we haven't seen that in the rest of the series.
Right. Sansa might be the first person he's underestimated, as now she's stronger than I think he expected her to become.
I think I believe him. I think he underestimated Ramsay. I don't think there's been anything in the show to suggest otherwise.
But he knows too much about everything else. Yeah. Why would he know what Ramsay is?
I think maybe we're conflating, like, Book Littlefinger, who does absolutely know everything, has a plan for everything, with Show Littlefinger, who's just more sloppy. Okay.
There's no way. He didn't know.
But yeah, because Varys and Littlefinger still know everything in the show. That's just, information is their thing.
But Littlefinger, he's sloppy in the show. Like, back in the second season, he just volunteered to Cersei that he knows all about her and Jaime, with no one behind him, and she almost killed him. And there's other examples that I can't think of off the top of my head. Like, his plans just don't make as much sense as they do. And I don't think I think some of that is shorthand. Like, the show just can't get into all that stuff.
I just feel like this one backfired on him.
Yes. Yeah. As far as Littlefinger is concerned, what's the best case scenario? As far as this thing with Sansa.
I think he thought she would still need or think she needed his protection, and it would lead to some kind of relationship where he gains power due to her name and status, perhaps. But she's kind of taking her own
now. He rubbed off on her. She's like calculating now, and he didn't anticipate that she would grow that much. I don't think
this is the second time she could have basically had him killed or jailed,
yes,
or whatever.
Yeah, that is true.
And she continues to let him go, and I think it's because of what she learned from him, and that he's just another pawn now to her, which we see later on, obviously, when she's talking to John and them.
He does have a shit ton of knights hanging out at the mouth of the north. What's he going to do with those if not help Sansa? Is he going to be like a last minute
helper?
She'll show up without permission.
Yes.
No, maybe. Or she'll use the knowledge she has to just say, hey, okay, I want your help. And he's going to follow her. I mean, she still has that Catelyn attachment as well. So he's always going to have some kind of emotional attachment to her.
Yeah. And it'll be nice to see the Blackfish again, certainly. The scene itself, again, I think the writers have been reading internet comments and internet articles about all the uproar they created last season with Sansa. This could have been written by someone at Think Progress. She just kind of, and I think they've also seen Spotlight too. There's a lot of Spotlight in that scene, like a sidebar, but in Spotlight, which is obviously about the Boston Catholic sex abuse scandal, they make a big deal of saying, we're not going to use words like molest. We're going to use real terms that leave no confusion about what actually happened. And Sansa does the same thing here, where she doesn't let Littlefinger have any illusions about exactly what happened to her. And like it, and her pain is about herself. Her pain is not about Theon. She's still bothered by this all the time, and she's taking steps to remedy this. I mean, it's for your Game of Thrones SJW fans out there, I think this is a necessary corrective from last season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about time new business came up.
Absolutely, yeah. Hashtag new business. for any MMC members listening.
Kisla, you know about a hashtag?
I know to say it in front of things on occasion.
A lot of dimes you could be wasting.
Exactly. I mean,
okay, so you'll be happy. I did see that the Razor might be coming back, so your flip phone may not be dead.
The flip phone's long gone. I upgraded to a slide phone. I don't know why you're laughing.
What,
that doesn't make any sense to me.
Kick flip or whatever?
I don't know. I don't have any sense of it. It's an expression too, with no E on the expression.
So you no longer have to hit a button 4 times to get the letter you want.
Oh no, it's got a keyboard and everything. Slides out of the back of it.
Are you still T9ing?
No, I type properly with my thumbs.
Hold on. Let's go back to the scene with Sansa.
Yeah, what do you got, Blair? What do you got?
What a segue. I think it's great. I love it. It doesn't matter if it's for the people who are upset about the rape scene. I think it's excellent, and I love that she names everything and takes power into her own hands. I just think, good job, Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
right. This is the Sansa should have had, and really the Sansa fans really wanted. Like, we've been waiting for this for a couple seasons now, so I'm glad it's finally here. And yeah, she's still one of my favorites.
Well, she was never equipped to be able to. She's never mature enough to be able to be this person before. Not that she had to go through these things to be more mature, but she's simply older. So it's a Sansa that you want, but you're also wishing a 17-year-old girl is going to have the maturity of a 30-year-old woman.
Well, 17 in this world is...
It may as well be
middle-aged.
Yeah.
If you live to 30, you're old man style.
Well, yeah, that's books. Obviously, I think show's different. As far as that goes.
Yeah, I think they added a couple years, but nothing too great. I mean, Dany was still like 14, I think, in the show.
And, I mean, we see Sansa in the next scene with still a chivalric view of the world, a feudalistic view of the world in which she is sure that the power of her name is going to will these houses to help in her cause, whereas Davos has lived longer and he's more skeptical. And the best way to get houses to rally to your cause is if they think that they can potentially win. And to that effect, she sends Brienne to the Blackfish to rally his men because that's going to be a significant force. And that'll help the smaller northern houses also join them. JR, MMC member JR, complained in comments earlier in the season about how he missed the political aspect of the show that used to be more prevalent. And I think we're going to see some good, solid, dank banquet hall scenes in northern houses in the next few episodes. So that'll satisfy him most likely.
Where she and John went?
Northern houses. I there's like rumors of them going to the Mormonts.
Okay.
How many Mormonts are left?
In the books they have there's a giant family.
Right.
And they're run by women also.
Right. Please, for the Manderleys.
Manderleys, absolutely. They have been ignored for far too long. It's time for some Manderleys.
Time for some Manderley culinary.
Well, I saw a theory today that they might go check out Hal and Reed and happen to run into Mira and Bran running away.
That's assuming Bran and Mira went that way, but we'll get there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's called a segue, Bobby.
I don't think we're ready yet. We didn't even talk about Tormund.
Yeah, we blew our segue last week, ignoring Tormund and Brienne. We did it again this week. As significant as this development is, it's still apparently pretty forgettable. Tormund just gives Brienne a big goofy smile, and she does not give it back to him. She does not reciprocate. Yes.
Are we not going to talk about Brienne calling Jon broody?
Jon, jokes. This episode's got jokes.
Yes.
Of the verbal and physical variety with the uncircumcised dong there.
Hey, you know, it was the second episode in a row to have a fart.
There was a fart in this episode?
Well, there was the fake
fart. Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw on the comment or on the question thread that someone was interested in whoopee cushions in Bravos. Yes. I mean, yeah, they are significant.
Scoot S from the region says, "This seems like a joke, but it is real. How legit were the whoopee cushions in Bravos? Wowzers!"
It's a theatrical community. They're good at production design.
Making of farts now.
I don't think that's what we had.
Yeah, sound editing qualities of the Free Cities. Bravos number one, no question. Pentos needs to step their sound editing game up. They've been lagging in that area for a long time. Last thing to say at the wall, Sansa sewed a new dress with a wolf on it, and she sewed a new coat for Jon that made him look like Ned. And it even makes him smile. So things are good. Things are good at the wall.
So Daryl W. says, speaking of, if Jon Snow is actually going to be Targaryen, does that mean it's okay for him to hook up with Sansa?
Yes.
Like
I said, Targaryan or no?
Cousins.
They'd be cousins instead of brothers and sister. But the Targaryens like to be a little closer than cousins. They like siblings.
And there's precedent, like non-Targaryen precedent in the world, too, that says cousins, whatever, who gives a shit.
Right.
Like Tywin Lannister married his cousin. That was the only example I could think of, but I'm sure if someone like Tywin Lannister can do it, then anybody can.
I think if we go back 200 years in our family trees, it's about the same.
Almost certainly.
You've got a king on the throne who is the child of an inbred couple.
No.
Very much so, yeah.
So, but I'm under persuasion they should not hook up. If
she's
they
got red hair, though.
What's that?
She's got red hair. He likes that.
He does
that
like
is true.
It, but they should not hook up because those would be the most awful teenagers. The children they'd have.
Be really moody.
There's no way all those teenagers like survive without being cutters or whatever.
A lot of black eyeliner.
Really get concentrated.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Shane. Well done. Miserable ass teenagers from the setting aside
good
the whole incest man. Stuff. Yeah, I mean they'd look good, but they'd be all fucked up.
Speaking of miserable ass teenagers in the far north.
There it is. We open north of the wall with Brandon and the Raven in a weirwood grove.
You can tell right there, Bobby's the only one of us who's worked on a radio station before. That's pro.
No, that was solid. We see how the White Walkers were made, the origin of the White Walkers. This is where we're going to get into Westerosi history.
Which, if this was in any other episode, it would be the focal point by far.
They could have spent more time on it, too.
Yeah, it was too short.
It was
such
quick.
A big thing. It was 30 seconds.
Yeah, this is like Littlefinger just kind of whispering back in season 4 to Lysa, "Hey, thanks for killing your husband way back when and starting this whole rigmarole." This is the big rigmarole. Rigmarole? Yeah, that's it. Kerfuffle?
Kerfuffle. Yeah.
I stand by my old-timey lingo.
Is it hashtag rigmarole? Just...
I definitely don't think so.
Okay.
I will say, I actually like that it was so short. Because it made me think of Lost earlier, where everything was such a big deal and it had been dragging on. They couldn't actually answer all the big questions they had because everything had to be a big deal.
Yeah, at least they answered it.
Right. They're like, here, this is a very practical reason that we create, you know, that these, the White Walkers are around.
Yeah. And with that,
this episode was directed by a Lost director.
Thank you, Riley.
The White Walkers are not actually bad guys, like I was saying. They're just
it's a Frankenstein monster. It's a Frankenstein monster scenario where they just got out of control.
By the way, how is it that they are like zombies that can crawl the walls and stuff in this episode? They're super fast and.
But they were at
Hardhome, where they came down the hill and ran into the gate.
And yeah, they're only zombies in the sense that they were dead. They're not like decaying.
No,
those kind of things.
They are decaying. Well, I guess not anymore.
They are decaying, but I don't think it has any impact on their mobility.
Okay.
They're magically driven, which means they can be whatever they need them to be. And in this case, they needed them to be fast and like a buzzsaw, essentially.
I think there's a difference between those little skittery guys and then the actual White Walkers themselves.
Well, the White Walkers...
Okay, so very much so.
The scene when Charlie is hiding behind a rock and they're all bumbling by and nobody gives him a second thought.
I think that was just like the slow march that the White Walkers were taking their whites wherever they were going at the time. There was just no sense of urgency for them.
And they were also trudging through the snow. I don't know, maybe that slowed them up a little bit.
All right.
Couldn't move as fast.
Does that have something to do with being commanded by the Knight's King? Like, did maybe he command them to climb the hut where Bran was? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Their powers do...
But they do seem, like, the little bony guys that are faster do seem different than the normal whites we've seen at other times. So I get that. I don't know if they just are different or they just act differently when magically commanded.
They just have that much less weight on them. They can move faster.
Yeah. Well, it could be like that old Nintendo ice hockey game where the skinny guys, the medium guys, and the fat guys. Yeah, the fat guys just crush the skinny guys.
That game is a lot harder than you remember.
Oh, it's a great game.
Yeah.
Is that the game they play in Swingers?
No, in Swingers they played NHL 94. I believe game where you could make Wayne Gretzky bleed on the ice and have an ambulance come out and get him.
Okay. That's our requisite tidbit of movie knowledge for the mediocre movie cast. We'll get back to this TV show now.
Thank you for listening to part one of this podcast. Please click over for part two. That's right. We talked way too long about this episode.